Hey everybody, welcome to another Baseball America Prospects podcast. I'm Kyle Glazer, talking the Ranger system today, joined on the phone by Ben Badler. Ben has done the Ranger system for us for a couple of years. Ben, the Rangers, we talked on the podcast last year, had a run where they made the playoffs five times in 7 years, two World Series appearances. And as we know, when there's big stretches of success like that, there is a time when it comes to an end, and the Rangers are kind of in that place right now. We saw them make some trades at the deadline to add more prospects into their system. They've had a couple of high picks the last few years, middle first roundish, and they're going to have another high one next year. Just overall, after talking to scouts and evaluators both inside and outside the Rangers organization, where is this system right now compared to its peers across the game?
I think it needs to get better. Like, it's probably going to rank somewhere in the 20s when we come out with our farm system rankings, because I think you look at the system as a whole, I don't see anybody in that farm system who's going to rank as a top 50 prospect in baseball. I like Hans Krause. I think he's a top 100 guy. And I like Julio Pablo Martinez too. And, I like some of the other guys in their top 100, but they don't have like one guy who you really feel comfortable projecting as a pretty solid impact type guy, as a top 50 overall prospect in baseball. I don't think they're going to have more than maybe a couple top 100 prospects in the game. And I think they have some other guys who certainly are candidates and could climb into that range at some point, but it's not a great system right now. There's some depth and there's some potential breakout guys if you want to look at the lower levels of the system, but I think most farm systems you could probably say the same thing about of guys who just came in as 2018 draft picks or 17 and 18 international signings, and the Rangers do have some pretty interesting guys on that front, but it's probably toward the that 20-ish and pushing a little bit lower range right now. Obviously, that could change some depending on trades, but it's definitely a farm system that needs to get better.
And one thing that jumped out at me as well is their top group is all guys in the lower levels. Hans Krause finished the year at low A. Julio Pablo Martinez was in short season for most of the year. Leo de Taveras, high A. Cole Winn, a 2018 pick, didn't pitch except in instructional league. And then Anderson Tejeda. Your top five guys are all A ball and below. And that's a little problematic when you look at a big league club that, last year had one above average offensive player, and he was Shin-Soo Choo, who's 35 years old. A lot of the young guys they've relied on have been below average offensive players. The pitching staff has been a mess for a few years now. There's nothing really coming. The Rangers went 67-95 last year. They're going to have a really, really high pick. Given where the talent in this farm system is and where the major league team is, at least from the outside looking in, it looks like you could probably expect a top five pick, not just this coming year, but maybe even the year after and potentially even the year after that.
Yeah, that very well could be. I mean, Joey Gallo is there. You've got Nomar Mazara. You've got Odor. You have some pieces in that lineup. And Willie Calhoun, guys who I think could really break through and be important parts of that lineup in the future, but they just haven't done it yet. I mean, Gallo is such an extreme player.
But to say the least.
Yeah, so, guys that, look, Mazara was still 23 last season. Gallo was 24. Odor, who's been around, obviously, for a while, still 24. There's definitely some guys in that lineup who could break through and obviously really didn't last year, but the pitching staff in particular, I don't know where you go with that one. And like you said, there are a lot of guys who I think will probably be in double A and above next year, who should be able to help in the next couple of years. But yeah, I think it's going to be still pretty ugly in 2019, and it's hard right now to see a path in 2020 unless, you know, a lot of those guys really break through, especially in that lineup.
But again, you know, as I like to say, if you or I had gone to any Texas Rangers fan at the start of the decade and said, hey, you've got a franchise that's made the playoffs three times in, you know, 40-some-odd years of existence, almost 40 years of existence, now I'm going to give you five postseason appearances in the next 7 years and two World Series appearances, but the trade-off is you're going to be pretty bad for the 3-4 years after that, I think every Rangers fan on the planet would have taken that deal.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, they obviously didn't get a World Series trophy out of it, but that's a team that had a lot of consistent success, consistent opportunity to be in the playoffs year after year.
Absolutely. Diving into this system, Hans Kraus has emerged as the number one prospect, the new number one in the Rangers system. As you were making your calls, doing your research, was it clear-cut at a certain point that Kraus was number one in this system, or was it a debate up until the end?
Yeah, I think it's debatable, but for me, Kraus is a guy I think who has a chance to be a true top-of-the-rotation starter. The Rangers have kind of slow-played it with him. I think they've been doing that just with a lot of their pitching, you know, their young pitching prospects in general. So it's one where I wish you had more of a track record above the short season level, but all of the stuff, like I don't think there's really much question about his stuff translating at higher levels. It's not like he's some smoke and mirrors guy beating guys with a really good changeup and some deception in his delivery. He's, you know, throwing up to, you know, as high as 99 with really high spin on the fastball, just totally blowing that pitch by hitters. That the slider is plus, or at least plus at times. There's some funkiness to the delivery, but that actually doesn't concern me too much as long as he's able to, I think, repeat that and throw enough strikes and have good fastball command. I think that should be fine. It is a guy I think has power stuff, front of the rotation kind of stuff, so he's far away just because he hasn't even pitched in a full season league yet, but there's really, really high upside with Kraus.
You know, it's funny. One of my most poignant memories from being in Southern California and covering the area code games every year, at the time I didn't know who Hans Kraus was, and here's this tall sophomore coming out, and there are very, very few sophomores that you see pitching in an area code games. And he's a sophomore in high school, and he comes out and touches 97. It's like, who is that? So that was my first introduction to Hans Kraus. Then obviously we saw him through the years, both at Dana Hills High School, NHSI, and start, you know, getting up into that upper 90s and hitting 99. One of the things with Kraus that was always a concern, if you will, and really the reason he fell out of the first round in 2017 was there were some concerns about the delivery, but there were some concerns about makeup. He had made some decisions in terms of videos he'd posted on social media, some of the things he had maybe said or done with opposing coaches and teammates that irked a lot of evaluators and had some concerns. Always a nice kid, well-spoken kid, just a lot of decisions that made people question if he'd make the right decisions in professional baseball. So far in his pro career, obviously the numbers have been great. What kind of feedback have you gotten in terms of him, you know, staying on the straight and narrow and the type of person he's been?
To me, I think what matters the most is that this guy has an explosive fastball that he can blow by hitters and can miss a ton of bats with both that pitch and the slider, you know, anything else. I think the most important thing is his ability to miss bats and have, you know, premium top of the rotation type stuff. I mean, I think what these guys do on the field is by far the most important thing.
All right, that's fair enough. You're moving beyond Hans Kraus. You get into this group, of a couple different guys. Was there a clear cut, you know, number two, or how many guys were kind of in the debate to be in this next tier?
After that was tough because it's like, you know, you wanted to find somebody who can really has really come out and can kind of blend the high upside with, you know, performance and as few weaknesses as possible. But all these guys really, you know, there's something there with all of them, like from two to like, I mean, probably maybe even like 9 or 10 in the system. But there's a lot of guys with a lot of different flaws too. I mean, to me, you know, that anywhere from like two to six. And if you really like, you know, say Bubba Thompson, you could probably make an argument for him to be higher on that list as well. Those are all guys where there's a lot of things you like and also a lot of warts or red flags with all of them. You know, for me, I thought Julio Pablo Martinez probably had the most well-rounded, balanced skill set of all of those guys. Now you can say, all right, well, he hasn't played above full season ball yet, but that's really more about just how the Rangers handle their Cuban players, and they've signed several Cuban players in recent years, and they've always really just tried to slow play it with those guys just to make sure they're getting acclimated to a new country and, you know, a lot of things both on the field as, you know, dealing with, you know, life as a professional baseball player in the United States, getting used to a new country, not wanting to push them too hard from a baseball standpoint their first year out. And then he went after the season to the Arizona Fall League against guys who are mostly, you know, upper-level guys or guys who will be in the upper levels of the minors in 2019. And he looked really good out there. So, you know, like for him versus Leody Taveras, I mean, you can make a case for Taveras higher just based on him being even younger and having been at a higher level. And I think he's a better defender than Julio Pablo Martinez. But Leody Taveras has a lot to prove offensively himself. I mean, Anderson, Tejeda, there are guys who like Tejeda more than Taveras, and Tejeda made some pretty significant strides forward this year. Certainly defensively, I think he's answered a lot of questions about whether he can stay at shortstop. He got a lot better on that side of the ball, and offensively the numbers were better, but that's still a lot of strikeouts for a guy who's, you know, we're at a level where the pitching's only going to get a lot better. So there's a lot of different red flags with all those guys. To me, I felt like Julio Pablo is, even though he is in the short season level, it sounds weird to say he's more advanced than those guys, but that really just had to do with just kind of how the Rangers, you know, chose to assign him to that level this year. I think that combination of being a little bit more advanced than some of those other guys and just the polished kind of all-around type skill set that he has as a premium position guy who I think he will strike out some, but I think it's going to be a manageable strikeout rate to go with the speed and the power that he has.
No question. I'm sure we're all excited to see Julio Pablo's, you know, first season here in the States after this acclimation period. You hit on it with Leody Taveras. This is someone who has ranked very, very high in the Rangers' top 10 for a couple years now, ranked high in some league top 20 rankings. The performance hasn't really been there. He's been young every level he's played. There was always a sense of, you know what, he'll be really, really good when he gets bigger and fills out. But there's a lot of people still waiting, and it hasn't quite all shown up yet. What's the level of confidence in Leody Taveras right now compared to, say, a year ago?
I think his stock is definitely down from where it was a year ago, but at the same time, I think 2019 is going to be a huge, huge year for him where I think he could, you know, really rebound in 2019, or if he hits again and puts up numbers again in 2019 like he did in 2018, you could see him start to really, really tumble. I mean, the good thing is I don't think anybody really questions the defense. It's It's plus defense at a premium position. The question is how much impact is going to be there as a hitter, and that's tough because he's 19 years old in the Carolina League. I mean, they've pushed him really hard. The age, I try to give him the benefit of the doubt in some sense, just because he's been pushed so fast. I mean, most guys his age are either a level or two or even three levels below where he's at. I think you can go back and look at guys like, I think Lorenzo Cain, for example, when he was in, he wasn't in that league, he was in the Florida State League, but when he was in, when he was in high A at even 21 years old, you go back and look at his numbers, it's not like he was a guy that was crushing the ball by any means, but, really athletic plus defender in center field. I think you could see, again, I'm not saying Leody Taveras is going to turn into a, potential MVP type of player like Lorenzo Cain, but I think it's important just to have some patience there with his bat. But again, if he goes out and hits like this again in 2019, you're not going to see him this high on the list next year.
Was there a sense that he's going to have to repeat high A? Because the high A to double A jump is generally considered the hardest to make in the minors. And I know the scouts who saw him in high A last year, and frankly myself as well, did not see a guy physically or skill set wise ready to really make that jump.
So that's going to be an interesting dilemma for their new farm director, Matt Blood, and the Rangers organization as a whole, because I think he has to repeat high A. I mean, I don't see somebody who's ready to go to double A, and nor do I think it's actually like a bad thing to put him back in high A. He's going to be 20 years old, right? The problem is you got to figure out, all right, well, where are you going to put Julio Pablo Martinez too? And then also, well, Bubba Thompson was in Hickory last year, right, in low A. So you've got three center fielders for, three different levels. Like, are you going to jump Julio Pablo up to double A, or, have him just skip, low A and high A entirely, but then put Leody back in high A? But then, what do you do with Bubba Thompson? Do you just have him, share the out, have him share the outfield and have him flip back and forth between center and right field? I mean, I think that's one option. Or you could put Julio Pablo maybe in low A and Hickory. There's a lot of different ways you can go. It's tough too, because I think Bubba Thompson really is somebody who, I mean, for me, needs to play. I'd like to have him ideally in center field every day because he has the tools to play center field. But right now, he's making mistakes just on some of his reads and routes, and he's kind of outrunning some of his initial misjudgments. But I think the more time you can give him in center field to work at that, the better it is for him. So I don't think the Rangers quite know yet what they're going to do to shake all that out. In a perfect world, I think you would just have Leody Taveras repeat the league, but just because of all the other different parts and moving pieces there, it's going to be interesting to see how that shakes out come opening day next year.
Absolutely. You hit on Anderson Tejeda a little bit earlier. He's one of the more interesting prospects just because he's so explosive. He makes some plays at shortstop that make you say, wow, cannon arm, does some really good things with the glove and then some other things that make you shake your head, but no more than other young shortstops. There's the ability to really hit the ball hard. Both, we saw 19 home runs as well as a lot of very hard hit outs on a line. There's also a lot of swings and misses, a lot of swinging over the top of, okay breaking pitches, but not nasty ones. And there's also been times where I've seen him get a little overly demonstrative, slamming the bat down at home plate, chirping at umpires. It's interesting because, there's been a lot of great reviews on him. And then there's other times you see him and it's 0 for 5 with 3 punch outs and just some things you don't want to see in terms of how he deals with adversity, I guess you could say. How does it all balance out in the end? Because, again, there's a lot of talent there, but there's also a lot of strikeouts, and sometimes these are the guys that are kind of the toughest to predict.
Yeah, it's definitely some of the loudest tools in the organization. I mean, conservatively, he put a 7 on the arm, and I actually think he did a better job with his footwork this year just to be able to, just to take better advantage of the arm. I mean, he used to make a lot of throwing air. Like, if you have that arm, like, you want to use it as much as possible, and sometimes the decisions on when to make throws or just how to use his feet on certain throws was not the best, but I think he made a lot of strides forward with that this season. But yeah, I mean, you mentioned the power, the bat speed. Like, if you're just looking at him quickly, like, yeah, like, the tools are going to jump out to you probably even more so than with Leody Taveras to a certain extent. I mean, it's more power with Tejeda than you have with Leody, whereas Leody, I think, has a better plan at the plate and better bat to ball skills. I mean, that's certainly, I think, without question. So I think the question is, how is that actually, you know, how are those skill sets going to age as they move up the system? And with Tejeda, I mean, he's got to find a way to cut down the strikeouts, and I don't, like, it's never going to be like a high contact type guy, but if he can at least learn, all right, you know, these are the pitches in my zone that I really need to just be targeting in on, and at least just be able to resist some more of those breaking balls right now that he's, like you were talking about, him just swinging over the top of, because the pitch recognition is not great. I don't think it's the greatest plan at the plate right now. I think he's just guessing a good amount. If he can just cut those strikeouts down to a more manageable level, all right, well, now you have a guy who's I think can stick at shortstop and has, you know, good power for a shortstop too. That's a pretty interesting guy, but that strikeout rate especially, and some of those red flags at the A ball level, again, like, the pitching doesn't get any easier when you make that big jump to Double A and then Triple A and obviously the big leagues as well. So I think definitely a lot of positive development steps for Tejeda in 2018, but still a lot of risk in that profile going forward.
Yeah, I mean, Tejeda, you know, it's kind of funny. If you were to tell me 5 years from now he's playing a ridiculous everyday defensive shortstop, hitting 25 home runs in the big leagues, I would completely believe you. If you told me 5 years from now he had struck out 200 times in Double A and never got above that level, I'd also believe you. You know, you mentioned the volatility of these Rangers prospects. In some ways, I think he almost represents that.
Yeah, there's two very divergent ways his future could go, for sure.
Absolutely. One guy who has reached higher levels and had success at the higher levels was Taylor Hearn. The Rangers acquired him for Keone Kila from the Pirates at the trade deadline this year. And just at first glance, I actually thought that was a pretty nice pickup for the Rangers. Keone Kila, obviously a very good reliever, but, you know, a setup reliever on a team that's in last place doesn't do a whole lot for you. While you got a really powerful left-handed arm who's, you know, succeeded in the Arizona Fall League, performed in the upper levels of the minors. He makes his Rangers debut here in the top 10. What was your overall assessments that you got on Taylor Hearn, and was there debate about moving him up higher, or was he pretty clearly, you know, after the top 6?
Yeah, I thought it was a nice pickup for them too. Like you said, big, big power arm from the left side, pretty consistently, mid-90s up to 98. He's 6'5", long arms, like, really uncomfortable angle, a lot of extension too. Get swing and miss with a fastball. So, I think that between that, he's got, with a feel for the slider and the changeup too. He's got good stuff. It's a matter of tightening his fastball command and learning how to best mix in those pitches. I think the secondary stuff has kind of ticked up, so he's kind of learning more about how to use those pitches now that they're actually better weapons for him. But yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, there's some debate about whether he'll fit better as a starter or as a reliever, and as roles are kind of evolving in major leagues, in the major leagues, some of those lines are blurring a little bit. But yeah, I like that pickup for the Rangers quite a bit.
And then as we get into the back of the list here, Bubba Thompson was someone that really opened eyes this year in the sense, you know, he's raw, two-sport guy. Goes out and hits, you know, 289, first full season low A, you know, made a, you know, good amount of contact, especially for a guy who's considered to be raw. I should say at least, you know, contact that resulted in base hits. Showed you some power, and then out in the Don Welke on-deck classic that they play at Petco Park every year, he hit the game-winning home run, the eighth inning for the Rangers prospects. And I mean, I was there, and this was not, you know, this was not a cheap home run. This was Petco Park at night, and he almost hit it to the second deck in left field off a, you know, he jumped on a 98 mile an hour fastball. Big bat speed, big power. He also had a, you know, took out a hanging breaking ball and hit it, you know, into that 402 foot gap at Petco. It would have been gone a lot of other stadiums. And for a 20 year old to show the strength and the bat speed to do that, I came away really impressed with him in that game. Especially following up on a solid first full season that he had. You know, we mentioned the volatility here. You know, how high could Thompson have ranked in this group? And is it possible that a year from now we're looking at a guy who's not just in the top five, but maybe even the top three?
Yeah, I think he's got certainly a chance to tick up. Like you said, it's a premium type of athlete and a lot of really advanced tools. If you're, you know, going in and getting a quick look at him, you're probably going to see something that sticks out to you right away, especially with the athleticism and the speed that he brings, and there's definitely raw power in there that I don't think he really gets to very consistently in games by any means, but there's definitely the upside for him to be that kind of power speed type threat. The risk with him is obviously, look, he was, you know, he's a little bit older for a 2017 high school player, so he's playing his first season at age 20, and then it's still, I don't want to say, he's not necessarily raw as a hitter, but there's, it's not totally a free swinger, but there's certainly at least some free swinging type of tendencies in there, and between that and it's not a high bat to ball type profile. The strikeout rate certainly is a red flag for a hitter who's still at the low A level. So certainly not a polished hitter by any means. But if you're looking at the raw tools and the athleticism and the overall performance in itself, it's not like he went out and had a bad year by any means. It was a solid year for a guy in his first full season, but definitely a lot of raw tools and athleticism. But with that, in terms of just the pure hitting ability, I think that's definitely the risk factor with him.
Overall, in this top 10, how many guys would you say were firmly in it, and how many guys were kind of on the cusp, you know, spot up for debate, if you will?
You know what? I actually think most of the top 10 guys were pretty clear cut guys who belonged in the top 10. Maybe that last spot with you know, Mason Engler, you can debate different guys there, whether you want to go with him, or obviously, you know, he was drafted behind Owen White. You could put certainly Owen White there, or Jonathan Ornelas, another guy from that draft class, with Ornelas coming out and having a nice year. I mean, Cole Reagans, you don't want to forget about him. But, you know, he just, you know, the Tommy John surgery knocks his stock down, especially as a guy who's still, you know, really far away. You know, somebody like C.D. Pelham, who has, a little bit of big league experience and is going to be closer to making an impact than a lot of these guys, but some of the upside just limited because of him being a reliever, or you kind of even go maybe the other extreme to some degree with, somebody like Oslavis Basabe, who had a great year in the Dominican Summer League and has a lot of really exciting athleticism and tools that he brings, but obviously the risk of being a guy who's still so far away and has yet to come over to, even to the States and play yet. So I thought the top, those top guys, you could certainly debate some of the order with them, but really until you get to the very back of that top 10, I feel like most of those guys were certainly the guys who should be in that top 10 group.
Absolutely. Well, as you said, it's a group that, as of this exact moment in time, is probably in the back 10 of baseball. But there's a lot of youth, a lot of guys who, maybe this time a year from now, it's a much better group just with some natural growth and development, and they'll have another high pick to add to it. So I would definitely assume this is a system that has a chance to be on the rise, but we'll just have to wait and see. Ben, thank you so much for joining us and putting the Rangers top 10 together, and look forward to seeing all the rest you have for all your other organizations.
All right. Thanks, Kyle.
For Ben Badler, I'm Kyle Glazer. This has been the Rangers Top 10 Prospects podcast. We got a lot more heading your way. Keep it here at Baseball America. Thanks for listening, everybody.